Welcome back to The Mountain Life. If you're like most people, you've probably taken a personality test. I know I have taken a few. Maybe the Myers-Briggs assessment revealed that you're a steamrolling ENTJ. Or maybe the Enneagram categorized you as a self-absorbed type 4. Man, we're really putting some knives in there. No matter your results, our next guest, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. Ben Hardy, says that these tests perpetuate myths about what personality is, reduce you to a stereotype, and make self-improvement seem impossible. For those who feel trapped in a box, Dr. Hardy has good news. Personality is not a fixed state. It's a series of choices you can make based on the future you want for yourself. He joins us to discuss his new book, Personality Isn't Permanent. Break free from the self-limiting beliefs and rewrite your story. Dr. Benjamin Hardy, welcome soon to The Mountain Life.
That's right.
We'll be bringing them up.
Yes, we will. Dr. Benjamin Hardy, I believe, is just finishing up another interview. So we get to talk about how we're going to rewrite our personality for just a moment then. And wow. And then we'll welcome him on. So as I said before, you no longer have to be an
ENTS, steamrolling ENTJ. I know my wife and kids definitely feel the effects of my personality. I want to see things happen. I want to see them happen my way. But professionally, that hasn't worked really well for me, and I've had to adapt. And so I'm looking forward to talking to Dr. Hardy. I've moved more into an ENFJ.
Feeling instead of thinking.
Right.
Okay,
right.
This is interesting. And I will look forward to talking to Dr. Benjamin Hardy because I'm an extrovert sometimes in some cases, and then an introvert in other cases. And it's kind of made me mad that I have to be assigned and sort of fit into this box. Well, it hasn't really made me that mad.
Yeah. You're walking down the street, pulling out your hair, yelling at people.
That's right. I believe we've now got Dr. Benjamin Hardy on the line. Do we have you there? Good morning to you.
Happy to be with you, introverted ENTJs or whatever you guys call yourselves.
Well, that's part of the fun is, you know, a lot of people love to be labeled. You know, they want to be put in a box. So they love taking these tests to understand themselves. And you seem to think otherwise, that is difficult and potentially problematic.
Yeah, definitely. I was surprised, to be fully honest with you, when I was getting a PhD to find out that personality doesn't actually work in types. I think that, like you said, sorry, what was your name, ma'am?
Lynn.
Oh yeah, Lynn, my bad. Yeah, like you said, like you're not actually an introvert or an extrovert. No one actually is. So personality doesn't actually work in types, but those types of tests make people think that their personality is more extreme than it really is. Really inaccurate, but what it really does is it leads people to adopt a label, which you already said, and that impacts their identity. And it really makes you think that who you are today is who you're always going to be, which is not actually the case. Both of you guys actually are not the exact same person you were 10 years ago, and you're not going to be the same person in the future. And so these tests kind of make you think, they make you think very dogmatically about yourself, which is obviously not what you want if you're someone who wants to grow.
It makes me think of the early IQ tests where you really pigeonholed people, and we've come to learn there's implicit bias, there's the need and understanding for, you know, our cognitive growth over time. How would you correlate these two ideas?
Yeah, I think that, you know, tests can only do so much, you know, and obviously IQ tests are very different from a personality test. Personality test is something that you yourself, you know, or you're assigning yourself the labels by answering the questions about yourself in a certain way. IQ tests, obviously you can be trained for them. Some people just honestly don't have they haven't developed the knowledge. And so they're similar for sure, but very different as well. But the point you're trying to make is absolutely correct, that those types of tests in the past led people to thinking that they couldn't actually develop intelligence, which new research is showing that intelligence is a lot more flexible. So I can see why those tests would lead people to thinking they're more dumb than they really were and stop people from maybe trying to expand their intelligence or learning ability. And the personality tests can do the exact same thing.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Benjamin Hardy. He's an organizational psychologist. He's the best-selling author of Willpower Doesn't Work. And he's out with a new book called Personality Isn't Permanent. And Benjamin, I'm wondering, I mean, when as soon as I saw sort of the title of your book and started looking through it, it reminded me of this really interesting metaphor about what some kids do when they leave high school and go off to college. We are so pigeonholed into especially our social strata when we're in high school, and it's really difficult to escape it. And so many kids say, you know what, I am done with that. I'm going to go off to this new college. No one knows me. I haven't been stereotyped or pigeonholed or put in a box, and now I'm a new person. And they just change, which is quite advanced if you think about it, you know, when, especially with the examples you give of us as adults thinking that we can't change.
Yeah, social role and obviously social circle. And, you know, those are, you know, those are some of the biggest things that predict how we act. You know, you're different in certain situations or among different groups of people than you are in different situations among different groups of people. So, yeah, when you're in, it's kind of funny because you can then go back, actually, like, let's just say you're out of high school for 5, 10, 20 years. You can go back and hang out with your old high school friends and you'll immediately revert back in so many different ways to how you acted back then, just because that's kind of how the relationship and the role is. So, yeah, you know, it's very, very wise, actually, if you're wanting to make big change, to be very thoughtful about the types of people you're around, you know, because social group predicts everything about who you are, from your ability to do well in school to whether you're going to be an alcoholic to whether you're going to be an entrepreneur. Like, you want to be very thoughtful, obviously, about your social group.
Right. So you talk about in you have this great thing on your website about the future self-training and taking us through parts of how we can decide to have this future self that is about, you know, it comes from growth thinking, not being static about who we are and where we are in life. And you ask the question, you know, are you the same person today that you were 10 years ago? And of course, everyone says no, but we all think that we're going to be the same, or not all of us, but we think we might be the same 10 years from now as we are, which is, I guess I've never really thought about that, who I'm going to be 10 years from now. We think about things we want to do and bucket list things we might try to accomplish, but we don't think about our personalities changing. Why is that?
Yeah, this comes a lot from research from Daniel Gilbert at Harvard. He actually gave a TED talk on the subject called The Psychology of Your Future Self, but it's really interesting. You know, we just don't spend much time imagining our future self. Like you said, you think about the things you want to accomplish, but you don't actually think about the type of person you're going to be. And if you actually spend the time to think about who you are now versus who you were in the past, you actually are a more different person than you think you were. You make very different decisions now. You see the world differently. You're in a different situation. You prioritize things differently. You're very different from who you were in the past, and the same will be true of your future self. I like the quote from Daniel Gilbert. He says, human beings are works in progress that mistakenly think they're finished. I think one of the major reasons why we don't, first off, we think that our future self is going to be the same person, which obviously stunts our imagination for thinking that we're going to be a different person. You want to actually view your future self as a different person. It makes decision-making a lot better in the present. But one of the major reasons why we don't think of our future self as a different person is because of our identity. Identity and personality are different things. Identity is how you see and describe yourself. So if you were to tell me you're an INTJ or if you're an extrovert, that actually doesn't say anything about your personality. That says that is actually you describing your identity, how you see yourself. But your identity shapes your behavior, which can over time predict what your personality becomes. And people spend way more time explaining their current or their former selves. Their identity is very much based on either the present or the past. And we speak in very definitive terms. If you say I'm an introvert, that's a very definitive and strong statement that has like very little wiggle room for growth or for change. And people often have a fixed mindset. You know, that's what Carol Dweck calls a fixed mindset, is where you are defined by who you are right now versus being defined by who you'd like to be in the future. That's the growth mindset. And so people as a whole, their identity is really limited. They don't see themselves very flexibly, and they ultimately don't spend much time imagining or strategically becoming a desired future self. They just think that who they are right now is who they're going to be.
Is there something comforting or some psychology that you can maybe help me understand where an individual, let's say myself, I want to see my future self. I want to see some of those improvements. I know that I can change, but I reference others and I don't want to see them change. I want to put them in a box so that I can understand my world and my relationships with them. Is there something there that maybe I need to understand, or others who are in that same role?
Yeah, it is very comforting to have things be stable and to not change. You know, the brain, our brain is what a lot of people, like neuroscientists, call it a prediction machine. So like, we form memories so that we can predict our behavior, so that we can actually like live a normal life. You know what I mean? Like, it's important to be able to predict what's going to happen in our life. And obviously in relationships, you want to be able to predict how the people you're in a relationship are going to act. Even though people can be consistent, but people will change, and you're going to change, and you're going to cause a little chaos potentially for the people that are important to you as well. But people so personality and comfort zone could be viewed as basically the same idea. You know, to do anything outside your comfort zone is going to be slightly outside of character, probably. And we don't really like uncertainty. You know, we don't like to deal with uncertainty. We don't like to deal with change to some degree, because that creates uncomfortable emotions, and we can't really predict what the outcome is going to be. And so we avoid uncertainty and we prefer stability or security. Interestingly, you can't actually make real choices without uncertainty. And it requires what's called psychological flexibility. You've got to become more flexible emotionally if you're going to get better and better at dealing with uncertainty. But that's obviously where growth can happen. You're not going to grow much if you're not handling much uncertainty. You're not going to become adaptive. Instead, you're going to become increasingly narrow at what you believe you are and what you can do. And interestingly, as adults, that becomes the case. It's not that you can't learn. Actually, adults can learn way faster than kids. It's just that adults stop becoming emotionally flexible and they stop dealing with uncertainty. And instead, they get themselves in roles and routines where they stop doing things for the first time. They stop building their confidence. And so, yeah, it makes complete sense that you wouldn't want a lot of uncertainty in your life. Like, I think that's very normal. you know, in relationships, you probably want more stability, but at the same time, you want yourself and those around you to have the possibility for growth, which would require you to handle some uncertainty.
In all actuality, I love change. I'm super comfortable with it, but and it makes others very uncomfortable. They really want to maintain what they're familiar with. And so, how do I continue to practice my flexibility that you were referring to? What are some of those steps? Maybe you mentioned that in your book. That I can continue. I know watching movies and seeing others change, seeing their narrative and their personality, their responses change over time. What are some practices that we can put into place?
I think flexibility is developed in many different ways. One is actually becoming more empathetic towards other people, rather than assuming that you actually know what the other person's thinking, to actually ask questions and get more context. Context is the thing that shapes the meaning of things. And usually when you get more context, you see things from different perspectives. This is one of the ways you can actually change trauma. Because trauma, which is really any negative event that impacts your identity. It could be obviously the big stuff, but it could be as small as being told you were bad at math. And really believing it. Like, negative experiences shape our identity all the time. And when your identity takes a hit, I guess you could say, you have a fixed mindset in some area of your life where you don't believe you can change and you're defined by the past. And so a big part of flexibility is just curiosity and like actually seeking more information without avoiding maybe painful truths, or just, you know, and that could be as simple as learning more about another person so you can actually see them differently than maybe how you've, you know, been trained to see them. It would seem to be about yourself. So seeking more information, just actually like being open and curious and empathetic, becoming increasingly empathetic towards other people versus judgmental. Same would be true of yourself. Actually just seeking more information. And then honestly, flexibility is best developed by pursuing goals. Flexibility and confidence are essentially the same thing. And that would require you to, you know, imagine a future self with various characteristics or circumstances and changing your narrative to some degree, rather than being so obsessed with who you are today. It's like from a growth mindset perspective, your future self actually is way more interesting and way more important than your current self. Your current self is very temporary. You're going to be different in the future, whether you try to be or not. People really are obsessed with their current self, but your future self actually matters a lot more from a decision-making standpoint. So if you think about who you want to be in the future and you take the time to actually start like developing that, not just in circumstance and events or like bucket lists, which are super cool. And it's really good to have future experiences that you're seeking. It's good to have to be defined in some degree by future experiences versus just by only past experiences. But another thing you could do is be trying new things. You know, you become flexible by learning new skills, developing, you know, doing something different than you always do. Drive home a different route than you did before. Like wear different clothes. Like actually try different things versus just being the same guy you were. Maybe go get a new wardrobe. But like on the most practical level, it's pursuing goals. It's actually taking action and making steps towards the person you want to be. And that allows you to become more flexible as a person. And I think one other just simple step to doing that is to telling people about your goals, telling people about who you want to be, and maybe getting mentoring or training to do it. Like that stuff allows you to have more confidence and flexibility. So you're not as defined by who you are in the past or present.
It's funny you say that because I think so many of us don't talk about our future goals or who we want to be, goals we're trying to achieve, because what if we don't achieve them? Mm-hmm. Or what if we change course halfway through? We decide, oh, that's not something I really want. And I think that keeps us a lot from it. But what a great tip that you give there. Talk about your future goals. I want to ask you.
It's essential, by the way.
It's essential. Okay, good, good. let's see. So I have a young friend that I was just talking to yesterday about some of these same things. And she is in the stage of her life where she's discovering, you know, career paths. And it seems like about every 6 months, she's trying something new. Like she became a ski instructor after only skiing for one season. And, you know, she had just learned to ski herself and then she decided to become a ski instructor. And she talked about the feeling that she has before every time she starts a new job that is something that she wants to go towards, is like a career path. And she's about to start a job in wilderness therapy in a couple of days. And she was saying she feels sick to her stomach. She sobs. She feels sick. She doesn't want to go into it. And yet it's the very thing that's driving her, is the desire to try new things. And I thought that was just such an interesting kind of contradiction. And I totally, I identified with it as well. I just thought it would be interesting to hear a few tips that you might give someone like that.
Well, it's interesting because she says she feels, I think what she's mostly describing is her emotions. And I think that that's probably the uncertainty that we're talking about, is that she wants to try new things and she's excited for this learning opportunity. But there's a lot of uncertainties. There's a lot of unknowns. Who knows what's going to actually happen? Is it going to work out? And so I actually don't think that those emotions are a big deal. Actually, that's how you become more psychologically flexible, is you become more willing to handle those. I mean, you know, I'm, for example, just launching this book this week. And of course, there's all sorts of highs and lows in doing anything big or in making any change to your life. And part of the reason why people don't change that much is because they don't want to feel that. They don't want to go through those highs and lows. There are obviously strategies to make it more a more, you know, healthy experience. And so I would first have to say that those emotions or those feelings are not actually a bad thing. They actually could be viewed as a good thing. A lot of it has to do with the meaning you give to those emotions. You can view them as, this is horrible, or you could view this as, wow, this means I'm actually learning. I'm trying new things. Growth mindset people would say, wow, I'm getting better. Whereas, and so like a lot of it has to do with the frame you give to those emotions. But as far as actually being able to handle the emotions and not get destroyed by them, you know, there's a few what we would call emotional regulation techniques that help you become more flexible. One would obviously be just journaling. Journaling is a simple, easy way to just write about how you're feeling. It clears the fog. There's a statement from Viktor Frankl, who wrote the book Man's Search for Meaning, but this is also just kind of said in different ways by many other people. But emotions cease to be suffering when you give them a clear picture. And so the idea of giving it a clear picture means you actually write it down and get it out of your body to some degree and turn it into a narrative. You turn it into a story. This is what I'm feeling right now. This is why I'm feeling this. And ultimately, then you can choose a different lens. Like, what is a different way of looking at this? You know, ultimately choosing to give it a different meaning. Another thing aside from journaling, which is just incredibly helpful, is talking to people about it. Like, you know, there's a quote in the Alcoholics Anonymous world that you're only as sick as your secrets. You know, like that actually, I think that has a lot to do with also future goals and plans like we were just describing, but it has a lot to do with your emotions. If you don't express them and talk to people and start to like get it out of you, then you're going to be confused and overwhelmed by them and not be able to be present and mindful and move forward. But if you are openly talking to people about it, like key people who can help you to be encouraged, help you to think about it differently, help you to feel calm, help you to like encourage you to move forward. And you can then turn it into a different situation, a different story. You can ultimately, a lot of the emotions are coming from a lack of perspective or understanding. And so often you need other perspectives so that you can see the situation more clearly so that the emotions can go away and you can. So I think that there's active ways that you don't have to get so hung up.
Yeah, I like that. As we get older, we often get more stuck in our ways and we identify ourselves by labels much more clearly. I think of my dear mother, who I love very much.
She's not listening.
Well, maybe I should challenge her to listen to this. She's so adventurous in the garden. She's, you know, always making new beds and she'll do anything in the garden. And then she has these declarations and labels about herself. I don't drive at night. You know, all these things in her life that she's decided she doesn't do. And I so want her just to do them, you know, just to prove to herself that she can, that she doesn't have to label herself. And you quote someone who says something like, the more labels you have for yourself, the dumber you are. And I think I might offer that one up to my mom because she's not dumb at all. But she does label herself. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, that comes from Paul Graham. He's like a famous venture capitalist. But labels do make you dumb because they limit you. You know what I mean? They make you think that the label is first off always true, and then you seek to confirm the label. And it ultimately, interestingly, there's a lot of research in, like, let's just say for therapy. And I'm not a therapist by any means, but, you know, for a therapist who's like guiding and conducting like a therapy session, like the worst thing, like, of course, diagnoses are important for the therapist so that they can guide the therapy. But there's a lot of research to show that it's actually bad for the client to be given the diagnosis. Like, don't tell the client that they've got anxiety or depression in most cases, because then that label leads them to, you know, seeing themselves a certain way. It becomes a part of their identity. And ultimately, it limits their capacity for choices outside of the label. And so it's, yeah, labels can stop you. And there's a lot of research to show that your mom's very normal in that degree. You know, people usually become less open to new experiences as they age. Mm-hmm. They don't want to deal with uncertainty like they had to before because, you know, like as an example, I've got two 18-month-old twins. We live in Florida. Most people, like many people, have swimming pools in Florida. We have a pool. And obviously you don't want to, you know, find your child in the backyard drowning. It's like a lot of people have their children get swimming lessons at really young ages here. Like we had our twin girls get swimming lessons shortly after their first birthday. So like barely learning how to walk and now they're getting dropped in the pool. You know what I mean? And like learning how to float on their backs and swim. It's crazy to watch little, but obviously the first few months were very unenjoyable to them. You know, like they didn't enjoy getting dropped in the water. They didn't, you know, like, but luckily they were able to, like, they had coaching. There was a good teacher. And now they've become a lot more flexible in that environment, you know, like they can do it. And now they love it. They jump in the pool and stuff like that. And, you know, there's a lot of misconception around passion, purpose, and personality. Most people think that these are all three things that are discovered. And passion, you know, is a lot more, it's better conceptualized as something that's developed. You know, passion follows skill. Passion follows investment. If you invest in something, like my daughters in this case, now they love swimming. That wasn't necessarily a natural passion, but they've now grown to love it. You know, and purpose, similar thing. It's a freely chosen task. You choose what you're purposeful about, and that gives your life meaning. And your personality then follows what you ultimately do. And so, you know, I do think, so this is really funny, and I don't advocate this, but one of my friends had her mom, or his mom, read my book. She's in her like 70s, 60, she's probably in her 60s. She read the book, and honestly, and again, I don't necessarily advocate this, she went and got a tattoo in her 60s because she had always just wanted to do something like that. And, you know, ultimately, I guess the book gave her permission to go out of her comfort zone. She ended up getting like a tattoo of like a cross or something, like very Christian, you know, it was like very symbolic of her religion. I don't personally have tattoos, but like, it was just funny. He laughed and he actually loved it and said, because like, it just pushed his mom out of her comfort zone. So I thought that was kind of funny, actually.
So what we hear you saying is, go try a new restaurant.
Go get a tattoo.
Go get a tattoo.
<You're just kidding. laughs>
Try a new sport. If you can't swim, just jump into a pool, and you will have a growth mindset and very quickly alter your fixed mindset reality.
To some degree, yeah. I mean, Malcolm Gladwell talks about 10,000 hour rule, which is not actually a real rule. In psychology, we call it deliberate practice, which just means you actually have a clear future self that you want. You know, in this case, our daughter's future self was them being able to swim. Maybe they didn't have that for themselves. We had that for them. As you grow as an adult, you choose who, you know, you conceptualize who you want to be in the future, and you use that as the basis for what you do today, and you can ultimately develop skills and abilities. So yeah, you need a future self in order to have a clear process to become someone you want to be.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Hardy. We really appreciate you helping us to see our future self, to develop a growth mindset, and help all of Park City to have that better understanding of what their future self is, and explore new trails, explore new inner worlds. So again, the book is Personality Isn't Permanent, Break Free from Self-Limiting Beliefs and Rewrite Your Story. Thank you so much, Dr. Hardy.
And we will be back after these words from our underwriters. We'll be speaking with local, well, let's call him celebrity, Keegan
Legend.
Swenson. He is a legend, that's for certain. It's The Mountain Life. Don't go away.